One of the issues that always plays into the decision that voters make in a presidential election is how they're doing. President Reagan had so aptly put it, is, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? You have to ask yourself that question. So Americans will ask themselves that question when it comes to deciding who to vote for in 2020. We don't know what the economy is going to be like. The most recent numbers showed on a quarterly basis that on an annual basis anyway, with the quarterly numbers we got, it's over 3%. We could be doing better, though, and there's a key to that. That's why Wayne Garden is with us. Wayne Weingarten is a Pacific Research Institute senior fellow, and his thought is let's stop spending so much money. He's tweeting at Wayne Weingarten and joins us now. Wayne, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. Good morning.
Is it total spending that's the problem? Is it the kind of spending the government is doing? And how is it that spending affects our growth?
The answer to the first two questions is yes. It's total spending and it's how we're spending it. I think if we start thinking about government spending, just like anything else, that, you know, when you start spending, it's helpful. They start building roads. They do national defense. All of these things add value. Once you get to a certain point, you start getting very wasteful, you start getting excessive, it adds less and less value, and that's where we are right now, where it's at excessive levels, where we're not only spending too much, but we're also spending it on inefficient things.
So it's kind of like it's a good idea to buy a new car if you need one, but that doesn't mean you keep buying a new car every single year, because at some point you don't really need a new car every single year, and to add to your fleet of cars. I wonder if you could explain what you think, what you call the 15% solution.
Oh, absolutely. Well, with that exact point you just made, that there's a certain number of cars you want to buy, which add value to you, and then you get too much. Well, we went and we did a study, and we said, well, how much government spending should we have? The one thing we don't do in the whole budget process is ask that fundamental question, which all households do, corporations do, how much should we be spending? And when we did that, we said, if our goal is to maximize the amount of growth we can get, we should be spending somewhere between 14 to 16% of national income, and right now we're spending 24%. So the 15% solution we start coming up with, how do we get spending over time down so that we're actually increasing the amount of growth, increasing prosperity, incomes, helping to accelerate growth back to where it was in the 80s and the 90s.
How did you arrive at that 14 to 16% of GDP as a number?
Well, we went back over time and looked at, okay, here's the amount of the government spending, which increased over time. We controlled for other types of things that would influence economic growth. And so when we basically ran the numbers, those were the results that we came up with. When we looked at other people who did the same type of analysis, they came up with numbers that were similar. Our belief is that it's somewhere in that range, and so that's the goal we should start moving the government toward. We're really hoping to get a conversation going about this. If other people would have different methods and come up with different numbers, that's fantastic. What we want to see is how much, you know, set that cap. To us, based on the historical record, based on the data, it's somewhere between 14 to 16%. And so that's the target we think we should be moving toward.
Wayne Weingarten with us, Pacific Research Institute senior fellow, has written a piece recently in Forbes, Control Spending to Grow the Economy. Wayne, you used the Canadian example. You said 2 decades ago Canada was able to resolve its problems. How applicable is Canada? It's a nation of, what, 38 million people compared to the U.S., you know, 300 plus million in terms of the economy and the burden on government spending. What can we learn from Canada, and how much does that really, do you think, applies to the U.S.?
There are differences, right? Exactly what you say. They're about one-tenth of our population. And so to that extent, it's easier to reform. But they have the same special interest problems. They were actually much further along the road. And people were referring to the Canadian dollar as the northern peso. And they were saying that they're part of the, you know, honorary part of the third world. So they were in a much worse economic situation. And so to some extent, that balances it out. But I think the important lesson we can draw from then is you can have the political, if you have the political will, you can fundamentally change the trajectory of the government, of the spending, of how people interact with the government and the services they get from that. And I think that's an important lesson, because that's what we need to do here in the U.S.
I hear that often, Wayne, about, you know, if you have the will to do it. It seems to me that what you really need to do is you have to have the ability to convince America to go along with what you're doing, because a lot of people have the will to make change, but you got to convince other people to get on the bandwagon, especially when it comes to something like Social Security, for example. Democrats often say that, you know, the Republicans want to change Medicare as we know it, or they want to change Social Security as we know it. Well, it has to be changed because it's not sustainable the way it is right now. The question is where that change comes in and how it's done. And neither Democrats nor Republicans, it seems to me, have been effective in communicating to America the best direction to move in. I'm not sure if they even agree on that, but take it from there. I mean, the will to succeed is one thing. The ability to communicate the need for success and the pathway to success, it seems to me, is even more important.
Yes, and to that end, I think we need structural reforms like budget process reform, right? The Congress hasn't passed a budget consistently for, what, a decade and a half, longer? So the budget process is broken, and so when you throw in a broken budget process with all of the kind of political kind of animosity that we all see, it's not so surprising that we're not budgeting, we're not prioritizing, and we're not having a serious conversation. So we absolutely need to have budget process reform that starts to put some sort of cap or some sort of goal in terms of how we're spending, and that forces a discussion in terms of, okay, well, if we only have this many dollars to spend, how are we going to allocate it? How are we going to spend it? There is a certain, I guess, pie-in-the-sky aspect to it, but we can't just throw up our hands and say, okay, well, there's nothing we can do, because we are literally driving over the fiscal cliff, right? 75% of the federal budget is on autopilot. So we have to do something, because the fiscal consequences of not doing something are just too great.
Related to spending, Wayne, I wanted to ask, President Trump had the other day suggested that farmers who were suffering under the imposition of tariffs, which is causing their exports either to be so cheap that they can't afford to make those, and they're suffering financially. So the president said, we will actually take money that's coming in because of these tariffs and we'll support our farmers. That seemed like a rather un-Republican idea, which is the federal government subsidizing farmers. And I wondered if you had any thoughts about that and whether that is something that might actually hurt growth, or is that just a necessary temporary expense?
No, it is not a Republican idea. It's anti-growth. It's anti-free trade. What we basically have done is we've slapped on tariffs to harm consumers in the U.S., and then that also has the impact of harming farmers. And so we're now going to harm consumers again in order to subsidize the farmers. And you're never going to fully kind of be able to compensate the farmers for what they've lost in terms of the opportunities. You know, business relationships have been broken. I mean, so it's a long-term cost that you're imposing. So it's just a terrible idea that right now the economy is growing well. The tax reform has worked. Deregulation has worked. And the tariffs and the kind of anti-trade rhetoric actually is a meaningful threat to growth in the future.
Since this is so much a part of the 2020 campaign, I wonder, that growth is there. As we mentioned, in the most recent quarter, it's at an annualized rate over 3%. The question is whether or not that growth is being felt by people. The question of economic inequality. What's your take on that?
That is interesting. I think that's policy-induced as well, and that starts getting into monetary policy. What we've been having is these extraordinary low interest rates that basically are subsidizing the rich, you can think of it that way, and harming the poor. And that has been exacerbating the income inequality that we've been feeling. But that's certainly one of the goals I think we need to work toward, is a more neutral kind of government policy that supports broad-based growth. And that we've always seen, and we're actually seeing it even to some extent now, that when you get that broad-based strong growth over 3%, wages across the spectrum rise. And that's what we want to see. So we need to get now we're kind of getting a little bit towards monetary policy, but we need to get that policy straight in order to stop inflating assets. And while you're inflating assets, you're actually harming income at the lower end of the scale. That is an incredibly important issue, because you see the Democrats coming up with all sorts of just silly ideas trying to address that issue. And that's not really the they're kind of going for the head fake. It's not the income inequality that matters. It's how do we get incomes growing for all Americans? And I think that's where the policy focus needs to be.
We will continue to watch this story. And, Wayne, I appreciate your spending time with us today. And, POTUS, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Wayne Weingarten, an economist with the Pacific Research Institute, managing editor of the Econostats Project in Forbes magazine, writing Control Spending to Grow the Economy. His thoughts on the show this morning, and he is tweeting at Wayne Weingarten.